need to worry about the future.
You need to worry about the future.
You need to worry about the future.
Big time. Absolutely.
In the UK, 5 million tons every year.
Excellent packaging.
When you just think of plastic, you think plastic is plastic.
But there's 7 different classifications.
Polypropylene.
Polyethylene.
Polystyrene.
There's loads.
I guess we've all done it. Stood for a moment over the bin, sort of, you know, paralysed, wondering where to drop that empty bottle or container, thinking about where it should go, like wondering if it can even be recycled, wondering where it's going to end up, wondering who's actually going to have to deal with it.
Continue.
My PhD was in synthetic inorganic chemistry.
I'm an economist.
Education. I trained as a youth worker.
Environmental science.
Economics.
Geology.
Sustainability.
So you drop it in the bin and try to get on with your day without spending too long worrying about, like, some poor dolphin having to wear your empty yogurt pot as a hat for the rest of its life. You know, it's not funny. I do think about it. That turtle with the plastic straw through its nose. Or those dead birds who rotted away and left behind this awful faded skeleton of plastic detritus. Sometimes I feel this heavy weight in my stomach. It's like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
I think with the plastics, it's the single-use plastics.
Isn't it? Yes, especially even with this face mask. Anytime I'm using a disposable one, I become a bit guilty.
All of the single-use stirrers and cotton buds and all of those things that we probably don't need in our lives in the first place.
You see it on the news, tons of plastic floating on the sea.
At the moment, we try to send it to China, but because they have now banned it, we look for alternative markets and try to dump it there.
Nigeria.
Kenya.
We look for alternative markets and try to dump it there.
Mountains and mountains of plastics that just won't degrade.
And the kids. They use their bare fingers, which is, if you look at their fingertips, it's all black.
Most of it's just burnt.
So the air quality is just... it's a real problem.
It's a tricky question. It's a tricky question. It's a tricky question. It's a tricky question. It's a tricky question.
Oh, I don't know the answer to that one. Sorry. I wish I did.
In some ways, the most important thing is the level of public policy. Like, way more than the individual level. Although, that's really important too.
Oh, I don't know the answer to that one.
You know, the irony is that plastic sort of started out as a solution to an environmental problem. In the 19th century, with the rise of consumer capitalism, mass production, and a really fast-growing middle class, the world was facing a huge environmental crisis. Like, for example, elephants were being slaughtered on an industrial scale to make billiard balls, you know, for ivory. And it wasn't just an environmental problem, it was economic too. Because hunting elephants to make billiard balls eventually stops being a viable business. Like, the same thing happened with telephones. For telecommunications to really take off, every house and office needs a phone. But you can't do that if they're being made of brass or these really expensive and rare hard woods that come from deep in the jungle on another continent. The materials being used weren't an appropriate resource for an economy that was being developed on an ideology of limitless growth.
So along comes Bakelite in the early 20th century, and the problem is solved. It's a product that can be synthesized in a lab or a factory, and it's beautiful, It can be coloured, it shines. It's like this jewel that you can just produce from cheap and readily available materials. I mean, at least at the time.
And suddenly, the possibilities are endless.
It was democratizing.
Yeah, because you could suddenly have, a piano without it needing keys made from ebony and ivory. And by the time we reached the 60s, everything seemed to be made out of plastic. Because of all the incredible useful things it can do, but it's a big problem too.
Yeah, because one of the really interesting things with traditional plastics is the fact that they will take centuries and centuries to degrade. So every plastic that's ever been made is still around. Because, you know, polyethylene, for example, takes 400 to 500 years to degrade. It was only invented in the 1930s. So, you know, every polyethylene that's ever been made is still on the planet. It hasn't decomposed.
And that's the complexity, isn't it?
It feels magic.
Yeah, it's this material that can be synthesized to do all these amazing things. With synthetic polymers, you can control the molecular weight, you can control the cross-linking of the polymer, the stereochemistry, and there's lots of things you can design into the preparation that can control those factors.
Yes, like, in a boring way, I can see my lunchbox sitting here, which is made out of plastic, and it's waterproof and airtight. And you can take the lid on and off a lot of times without it breaking. So things like, on a very sort of practical day-to-day scale, plastic does what I need it to do.
Or right now, with COVID, it's so vital. We need single-use masks for doctors and nurses, and all sorts of PPE. But it's terrifying to think that the plastic and all that PPE is still going to be here in, I don't know, 500 years.
It's amazing and necessary, but it's also an addiction, driven not just by necessity, but by the economy's need for growth and our demand for convenience.
And you're suddenly back where you started, with your hand hovering over the recycling bin, wondering whether to drop what you're holding and just forget about it. But I know that even after I've dropped it, I won't be able to let go. Instead, I'll be thinking about the next 500 years. I'll be thinking about children in distant countries climbing over mountains of plastic without shoes, looking for something that can be recycled. I'll be thinking about the plastic accumulating in the oceans, trapped by the currents in areas the size of continents. I'll be thinking of every year of my life, calculating the weight of my life in landfill, the shoes I've worn out, the toys I played with, the wrappers from sweets lost to a gust of wind, cling film, coffee cups, plastic bags, old TVs. Wondering about what I could have lived without. Wondering about the suffering my choices might have inflicted on others. Families on the other side of the world packing wet towels under their doors to keep toxic smoke out of their living rooms, as the remnants of my demand for convenience is burnt outside their home. Worrying about the fact that the planet will still be paying the price for a takeaway I had 10 years ago, 400 years after I'm dead. My sense is that plastic has become a byword for something that we should be avoiding. When there's all kinds of uses that it has that at the moment appear to be indispensable, that are maybe questionable for the future.
Plastics are wonderful. There are things that plastics have revolutionized. From their inception, plastics have revolutionized many aspects of our lives. But because of its cheapness, because the availability of fossil fuels, you know, rather than taking a balanced approach to what's an appropriate use of plastics, it's just been plastics can replace everything. Plastics have been abused. And I think we have a duty of care to reset people's perceptions. Plastics do have a place in our society, but it's got to be in the context of sustainable living. And actually, there'll always be a place for single use.
So there's lots of tricky questions.
And these questions won't be answered by individuals working away quietly in their own field or discipline.
It's a bit like those chains of molecules in a polymer. Everything's connected. We need to work together. We're all links in a chain.
But the question is how we do it.
Continue.
What's my background? My PhD was in synthetic inorganic chemistry.
I'm an economist.
Education. I trained as a youth worker.
Environmental
my
science.
My PhD was economic. In synthetic inorganic chemistry.
Geology. Education. I trained as a youth worker.
Environmental science. Environmental
economics. Science.
Environmental geology. Science. Sustainability. Science. Sustainability. Science. Sustainability. 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 Sustainability.
Sustainability. I've always been fascinated in making new compounds and kind of elucidating the structure. So, coordination chemistry. If you're what's called an inorganic chemist, that means you have a metal in the middle, and then you play around with all these kind of surrounding organic or carbon-based chemicals. So all these carbon-based chemicals can bind to the metal center, and they can all be of different sizes, in other words, sterics. And also, they can have different groups in there, which means their charges are different, so you can control the electronics. So by controlling the sterics and the electronics means you control the behaviour of the metal centre. And it's the metal centre which is the active centre for doing the catalysis.
I was a researcher on a project with Scarborough Borough Council. So they have a number of flats and terrace properties in their borough. They don't have space for a wheelie bin. And they've been issuing them with a single-use plastic bag, basically, that they fill with their recycling waste and put out. But the council has a strategic commitment to eliminate the use of single-use plastics, so they wanted to look at alternatives to these single-use bags they've been issuing to flats and terrace properties in the area. My research was to look at the alternatives and to talk to stakeholders about what they were looking for in an alternative, to actually work with the waste crews and show them the different alternatives and say, if we had a big plastic box, what would you do with that? Could you load it into the back of a lorry? Some of the practical and physical considerations that I guess you wouldn't necessarily think of if you were just looking at what the residents would like to collect their waste in.
I've probably been the enemy, if you like, because I've been making polyethylenes and polypropylenes, so I've been making traditional plastics. In the 1990s, you know, we did quite a lot of work with big companies. We made lots of catalysts and sold licenses to one of our patents. So we were churning out lots of, you know, traditional plastics. But obviously in the last few years, there's been a big change in the wind of the politics. And if you want to get kind of funding now in the UK to make new catalysts for making new plastics, they're not really interested in making lots of new polyethylenes. You have to make things now which are going to be environmentally friendly.
I came into this with a background in geology. So I was looking at landfills and their hazards, you know, as a piece of earth with sediment and moisture moving through it. I was looking at what sort of pollutants might escape from the landfill. And I moved on from there to look at resource recovery, like how we could recycle material from cars. And then I got into policy and from there into more economic geography, social science, looking for ways of studying how people deal with or try to avoid waste. And over the last 5 years or so, that's been increasingly referred to as the circular economy, where we try to think about how to design products to be more resource efficient from the beginning, rather than just worrying about what we do with the ones when we finish with them. So it's trying to take more of a preventative approach.
More recently, I've been focused on designing new catalysts for accessing new biodegradable polymers. By manipulating the properties of the catalysts, you can actually manipulate the properties of the resulting polymers. And obviously it's important that we can make these from cheap materials and that we can make them on a large scale and ensure that the properties that we get from the resulting polymers are friendly in terms of toxicity and biodegradation. It's also important that we can also return some of the more favourable properties of petroleum-based types of plastics. For example, if you wanted to replace polyethylene for a plastic bag, you still want to retain the strength of the polyethylene in your resultant biodegradable polymer.
My role is more on the sciencey side of things too.
Looking at a new kind of bioplastics to find out whether they're actually environmentally better than conventional plastics. So I've been doing some experiments with bio-based plastics and seeing about how they degrade when they're in the environment. So if they were littered, for example, I look what happens to them when they're in seawater, when they're in soil, when they're in compost, and when they're exposed to the air to find out exactly how they break down.
What we are doing is helping businesses to try to, first of all, visualise how their supply chain looks in terms of the plastics that they use in the business. So, for example, we're working with Morrisons. And the first thing we did was to help them to identify the various business units that they have and the plastics that they use in each of those units. Then we map it using a web app that we developed for them. So in other words, we are trying to help them to be able to, first of all, know what they have, and then we'll be able to track it over time. And once they have that kind of visibility, the management will be able to know, for example, how much plastics have been generated over a certain period. And out of that, what percentage that we've been able to, let's say, recycle, and what percentage went into landfill. And then the type of plastics that we use and how we are moving away from the hard to recycle plastics into the easy to recycle type of plastic packaging.
One of the things we're looking at with bio-based plastics, we're asking if it's actually better. If we could get a plant that grows without using too many chemicals, something like that, and when it's being used, if it could then break down safely in the environment. So even if it did end up being littered or it was in a landfill, it would eventually vanish. So I think that's quite promising, you know? Because we're not banning plastic. We're not saying that you shouldn't use plastic. We're just making it different. We're taking away some of the properties that make it bad, you know? About how it could last for like 200-300 years. Or some plastics, when they break down in the environment, they release chemicals because a lot of them will have additives put in them. So things like flame retardants or plasticizers that make them more flexible, and some of this can be endocrine disruptors or they can cause cancer, things like that. So if you can make it without having these dangerous additives, some of them have been banned already, but if we can get it so when they break down they're not dangerous, so they don't break down into microplastics, which would, you know, they've been finding more that microplastics can get into the food we eat and can get into our bodies. They spread through the air, through the water, so everywhere there's plastics falling from the sky onto us. And we will have it in our bodies. If we tested it, we'll find that we do have plastic inside us. If we can get plastics that will not just get smaller and smaller, but will actually just break down into their parts, then you know that would take away a lot of what's bad about plastic and leave what's good.
But I mean, some of these biodegradable polymers at the moment, the origins are from the likes of cornstarch. So I think these things are not unlimited stocks. So if you use them for making biodegradables, you're taking away whatever's used for something else. Do you know what I mean? So I think we need to be careful that we're not stealing from Peter to pay Paul or whatever. You know what I mean? Because they're getting into the food chain.
5 million tons.
5 million tons.
5 million tons.
5 million tons.
Mm-hmm. It's such an embedded part of our lives. Look at all the things you can see that are made of plastic. In your home, out in the street, the things you buy. Like, you pick up the plastic box of strawberries and place it in the plastic shopping basket. You pick up a cucumber wrapped in cling film. The chickens are lined up under the glare of the fluorescent lights, each sitting on a plastic tray, wrapped in plastic. Even the bananas are in plastic bags. Maybe to limit food waste. I assume that's why. But I'm not sure exactly how it helps. I remember overhearing a conversation between a little boy and his mother when I was at a checkout. He was holding a toy dinosaur. A plastic toy dinosaur, actually. And he was looking rather dispassionately at the people picking through the loose fruit and veg in that very serious and unself-conscious way that kids do when they're curious. And he said to his mother, "We're not hunter-gatherers, we're scavengers."
Smart boy.
Those are the insights we need.
As researchers, we need to be alive to the question of where innovation and change are going to come from.
My background is as a youth worker, so I'm really passionate about facilitating the voice of young people, particularly those young people that are less likely to be listened to and are often disengaged or disadvantaged in some ways, by society, by, you know, politics, whatever. I won't get into that. And I'm really passionate about nature as well. So it's kind of this interface between nature and young people. I'm really, really passionate about the effects that we as a humankind are having on this beautiful planet that we live on. And I'm also really excited about developing this model of this new methodology that's combining both those aspects of working with young people, facilitating their voice, and doing something towards providing something positive for the planet, which is citizen inquiry.
One of the challenges, I think, of the research is that there are so many different people involved in the plastics industry. And one of the things that, initially anyway, that we are trying to do is map out the whole value chain, you know? And see, like, producer to packaging person, food person, consumer, waste company, waste collection people, etc. And I think it's difficult also in some ways because an awful lot of people who are actually involved in the chain don't think of themselves as plastics people. They think of themselves as, I'm a food manufacturer who happens to use plastic. I know nothing about plastic. I just happen to use it because it's cheap. Or I'm a packaging designer. I don't really know anything about plastic, but I use it because it's transparent and it looks nice on the shelf.
Just because someone lives on a housing estate in Hull doesn't mean that they're not bothered about the effects that human behaviour is having on the planet. So to me, it's really important that these young people are, that their voice is facilitated and their agency is really activated and realised. Like, they've all seen the Blue Planet with David Attenborough. They've seen the turtle with a straw up its nose and creatures trapped in plastic bags and stuff. They've seen all these really horrific images that imprint themselves on their minds. So the first priority for these young people is about the animals. But then as they start their inquiries, they notice the effects that plastics are having on human beings as well. So this is where it kind of moves into the need for education. At first they're kind of thinking, we need to go and get in the sea and save the animals, and it's all about the sea. But that just shows the effect of media, really, on young people's views. Once they start carrying out research themselves, they find out that it brings it to more of a local level, rather than a globalised kind of what's happening in the rest of the world, through being engaged in research and through them carrying out their own inquiries. For example, one of the groups decided they wanted to do a survey, which they carried out in a shopping centre in Hull. And they found that adults were not concerned at all. The people they talked to didn't mention animals at all. It was all about money. It was kind of more about the consumer aspect of plastics. So they were talking more about the practical circular production and disposal of plastics. So that kind of got the young people interested in that. So their thinking was changed through consultation and through communication and connecting with people in different ways rather than just getting the information from the media. And if learning can be self-directed, young people can follow their own trials of inquiry.
Something I have a huge issue with, personally anyway, about this whole thing, is that there are lots of different voices with limited amounts of power within that chain. But there is an absolutely deafening silence from the oil industry, who is actually producing this as a byproduct. And because the economics around oil production are changing, plastics production is becoming more important. And because the oil price is so low at the moment, there's so much cheap plastic around, it's ridiculous. But they are still being quite heavily subsidized. The whole economics around the refineries are encouraging more production of plastics. And I think countering that science and that long-running power, as it were, from the oil industry is really, really challenging. Really, really challenging.
So maybe the most important thing, after doing the research, making the right decisions about what I buy, or making sure I recycle what I can, is writing to my MP. You know, finding some of that agency, if we can.
Yes, I guess that's a good way to look at it.
What we really need to do is to take the positive outcomes of the research and work with policymakers, with government, with local government, and with the general public to enthuse them around what can be done. I don't think anybody can sit back and say, well, that's a great invention, or that's nice to know, and sit on their laurels. I think what we need to do is use this to derive some change. And I think we need to work more closely with our partners. Because I think that if we work collectively, we've got a much better chance of deriving change than the University of Hull on its own trying to derive this change. But I think it's got to lead to some kind of action and some centralised action. We have to inform consumers, and we have to use policy tools to sort of help companies realign their perspectives and their incentives around what they're doing.
Yes, we need to start asking questions about labour and value in our markets, because it's a different way of thinking, isn't it? Creating a sustainable product that isn't designed to be replaced every few years. That's not a common way of doing business.
That's where government policy needs to come in. I think industry needs to be steered away now, probably by government incentives. A few carrots, if you like, to work in the biodegradables area. Because a lot of companies, we found this in the Humber region, we try and get them involved in the project, they're keen to chat to us, but nobody has the infrastructure for scaling up biodegradables because the machinery is different to that which is used for making the traditional plastics. So there needs to be some kind of big financial input for these companies so that they've got the right kick, if you like, to get involved.
That's why we need proper policies like government policies and all this, so that we can have a uniform playing field. For example, some of the supermarkets are doing their best, but some others are also not doing as much as they can. So if there is a flat policy which states what you should do and there is a level playing field, I think that would help. And it will also help the consumer in terms of feeling less guilty, because you don't have that choice of choosing. You have to go with what is there.
So I think that will start at the national level. You do your bit, then you move to the regional level, which is EU level, then global. So with each person doing their bit overall, everyone will contribute to helping to address the problem. So it has to be a mixed approach. It cannot just be country level, or regional level, or international level.
But the government definitely needs to be more visible in terms of doing their bit.
But from what you've been saying, it seems to me that, like, I wonder if it's going to be possible for things to change. Because it strikes me that there would have to be a whole-scale rethinking about economics and the nature of capital in order to begin a process of constructing an economy that could deal with circular, sustainable modes of production. This seems to be about more than plastic. It seems a little bit like we need to remake the world.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that one. Sorry, I wish I did.
What do you think it could look like, though? If we can start to affect change, can we carve out spaces for hope? Like, what could the world look like in 25 years? If we can start to make the right sort of changes to the way we live?
I would hope that it would be much cleaner in terms of air quality, walking around the streets. I mean, one of the things that I haven't really mentioned is another pollution issue is maybe carbon dioxide. So one of the things we've been looking at is using carbon dioxide as a feedstock for making new polycarbonate polymers. So, I mean, if you imagine, if you can do that on a big scale, then all these CO2 emissions, which are problematic, could actually be then turned into something which is a positive. So again, that would be, in terms of air pollution, that would be a big plus.
I think we will have a more visible way of looking at the problem to see where we are. It's not going to just solve the problem overnight, but at least it will help to achieve the goal of reducing the use of plastics and find an alternative solution. So we will definitely have a tool that will help in that aspect, to measure how best the supermarkets or the industry more broadly is doing in terms of whether they will be able to achieve that goal or not. It will be a sort of boost or a push.
I think we'll have a better understanding of plastics. I think we'll have better systems for collection and recycling, extending the life of plastics. I think by that stage, I mean, that's sort of 25 years' time, isn't it? I think consumption or consumer awareness of not just plastics but a range of environmental issues will be greater. And so I think there'll be increased demand for more sustainable products and services. And I think companies will be at a different point as well, and they'll actually be looking at what they produce in this sort of circular economy thinking, saying, actually, when we put that into the market, where does that go? Who is the user? Can we get that back? And, you know, take more responsibility for the products that go out into the market and then ultimately how they're disposed of.
I guess the ideal scenario is if in the household you could have, even in your back garden, some kind of pod where you could just throw into the pod the biodegradable material and it biodegrades into environmentally friendly substances. Almost like something you could put onto your grass to help your grass grow. Then, you know, it ticks all the boxes.
Is that likely?
Maybe. That's what we need to be imagining. Plastics have given us some extraordinary benefits. There are some plastics that can be made that have similar strength properties and longevity properties to metals, but they're significantly lighter. So if you incorporate those plastics and polymers into vehicles, transport, then you can massively reduce the amount of fuel that you require to move that vehicle. So, you know, it could be, you could use metals, but metals are much more expensive to process. And also generally, they're quite heavy. The lighter metals tend to be extremely expensive and, you know, preserved for aerospace applications. So there's a definite purpose for a non-single-use polymer for strength and longevity applications. For instance, talking about biomedical use, they've got hip joints, you've got syringes and things for single use, but you've got lots of plastics that have a much longer lifespan within the body. You've got bioresorbable plastics. You don't want to risk someone's life by opening them back up again to remove it. But if they resorb and they go into the body and they degrade into safe products, and then, you know, that's, it saves money for the health service, and it also prevents someone having an infection as a result of that procedure. These things were unimaginable 100 years ago. It just depends on our collective motivation.
I think in 25 years, people will have a greater sense of responsibility for their actions, their personal actions. I think the process we're going through at the moment is sort of quite slow and steady, and I think we need more acceleration and movement towards a more sustainable world. And I think, you know, certainly generations now are much more environmentally aware and are demanding more environmentally friendly products and services. And we're already seeing it with, like, people leasing jeans rather than buying them and all sorts of different innovative models. And so I just think we'll see innovation in the next 25 years. That means, I think, if you're sort of an irresponsible business in that sense, socially or environmentally, I don't think you'll exist in that time frame.
And that's the importance of education, I guess.
The need for creativity.
The need to allow young people to help define the future.
I think that through self-directed learning, young people, and everyone really, can shape their education in areas that are important to them, rather than those that have been kind of imposed on them. And I think we would find that what is important to young people are their local communities. Because, I mean, that's another thing that I think is important, that people are educated within their communities, by the people who are working in the community and living in the community. Because it fosters a desire to care for these communities and care for our local environments. And that, by proxy, affects how we think about using our precious resources. I'm not saying the curriculum we have is all bad. Of course it isn't, and I do agree with having a structure. But it needs to be creative and it needs to be flexible. It needs to respond to issues that are so important to the world. Not necessarily always looking back all the time and looking at things that we've already learnt. We do need those as well. I understand the need for that. And I'm not negating the need for that. But it also has to be about looking forward and creating solutions and working towards a more participatory, creative future.
There are things plastics have revolutionised.
It's amazing and necessary, but it's also an addiction.
In the UK, 5 million tonnes every year.
My worry is microplastics, because they're getting into the food chain now. You know, we're not fully aware of what damage these can do in terms of our own health.
So there's lots of tricky questions.
As researchers, we need to be alive to the question of where innovation and change are going to come from.
Because it's a different way of thinking, isn't it? Creating a sustainable product that isn't designed to be replaced every few years. That's not a common way of doing business.
I guess we've all done it. Stood for a moment over the bin, sort of, you know, paralysed. Wondering where to drop that empty bottle or container. Thinking about where it should go. Like, wondering if it can even be recycled. Wondering where it's going to end up. But maybe that's the best place to start thinking about all of this. Because in that moment, when we let go of what's in our hands, we have an opportunity to imagine all of the possible futures bound to that piece of plastic that we no longer want or need. In that moment, we have an opportunity to see that when we throw something away, when we buy something, when we consent to a particular way of living, we're casting a vote about the future, as individuals, as members of a community, as inhabitants of the wider world. If we're not careful, the plastic we throw away today will still be here in hundreds of years' time. The future is passing right through our lives every day. We throw it away. We burn it. We bury it. We send it across the world for other people to deal with. I can't help thinking that we need to hold on tighter to what's in our hands. We need to pause for thought. Together. We need to take the time to imagine a new world for each other. Before we're buried. Or lost in the landfill. Or caught in the tide. It's all possible.
Links in a Chain was written by Campbell Edinburgh, drawing on interviews with Dr. Charlotte Dean, Professor Pauline Deutz, Dr. Roland Gettor, Dr. Anne Kilden, Dr. Claire Lee, Professor Carl Redshaw, Dr. Karen Rogers, and Dr. Jenny Spear from the University of Hull's Plastics Collaboratory. Dramaturgy was by Christian Billing, with original compositions by James Rushworth and Hannah Walker-Brown. It was produced by Hannah Walker-Brown. Links in a Chain was made with support from the University of Hull and the Engineering and Physical Sciences Research Council.